हरे राम सना श्रीमादे तमस्तमादिग्निशावहै ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः ॐ जय श्रीकृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्रीअद्वैत गदाधर शिव सदि गौरभक्तवृन्द हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे.
The Lord of the Magadhas then, re-entering his capital and calling together his friends and relations, installed Jarasandha on the throne. King Brihadratha then came to feel a great distaste for worldly pleasures. After the installation of Jarasandha, King Brihadratha, followed by his two wives, became an inmate of an ascetic asylum in the woods. And, O King, after his father and mothers had retired into the woods, Jarasandha, by his valor, brought numerous kings under his sway. Vaishampayana continued, King Brihadratha, having lived for some time in the woods and practiced ascetic penances, ascended to heaven at last with his wives. King Jarasandha also, as uttered by Kaushika, having received those numerous boons, ruled his kingdom like a father. Sometime after, when King Kamsa was slain by Vasudev, an enmity rose between him and Krishna. Then O Bharata, the mighty king of Magadha, from his city of Girivraja, whirling a mace 99 times, hurled it towards Mathura. At that time, Krishna of wonderful deeds was resting at Mathura. The handsome mace hurled by Jarasandha fell near Mathura at a distance of 99 yojanas from Girivraja. The citizens, beholding the circumstance well, went unto Krishna and informed him of the fate fall of the mace. The place where the mace fell is adjacent to Mathura and is called Garavasana. Jarasandha had two supporters called Hamsa and Dimvaka, both of whom were incapable of being slain by weapons. While conversant with the science of politics and morality, in council they were the foremost of all intelligent men. I have already told thee everything about that mighty pair. They too and Jarasandha, I believe, are more than a match for three worlds. O brave king, it was for this reason that the powerful Kukura, Andaka, and Vrishni tribes, acting from motives of policy, did not deem it proper to fight with him. So he's acting like a father, he's doing everything properly for the kingdom, it's all working very, very nicely. But still, there's a problem. Right? He's running it perfectly. He's doing everything according to the Vedic system. Jarasandha kept Brahmins. He worshipped Shaligram Shila. You know, his citizens are very happy. But what's the problem? Doesn't accept Krishna. But even if it wasn't so much that he didn't like Krishna, that's obvious. But even if before that time, you only disliked Krishna after he killed Kamsa. But before that, what was the problem? You see? Because he's doing everything perfect according to the Vedic rules, but he's not connecting to Krishna. So still it's Maya. It's good Maya. You know, it's solid gold Maya. You know? But it's still Maya, right? Nowadays it's, you know, solid iron Maya, maybe even some rusty old iron Maya. Like that. No pun intended. So, you understand? So then, does that make sense? So here is perfect. That's why, even though we profess the Vedic culture, if it's not connected to Krishna, it's also useless. So one has to be very clear on that, that when this is happening, that that doesn't mean we don't support the Vedic culture. Our point is Vedic culture in connection to Krishna. You know, bottom line is connection to Krishna. But when it says just connected to Krishna, doesn't mean we throw out the Vedic culture. Right? So you get those that propound, we have to have the Vedic culture, but they're not showing how to connect it to Krishna. Then those who are saying, oh, we just connect everything to Krishna, we don't care for all these rules in the Vedic culture. So both miss the point. Right? Because the actual thing is Vedic culture in connection to Krishna. Of the two, connection to Krishna is the most important. Does that make sense? So it's nice that they're saying we have this faith in the holy name, we don't care for any rules. That's good. That's nice. That's a good sentiment. But is it real? How many rules do they have in their life on everything else? Everybody else does something wrong and they just say, hey, it's a material world. This happens. We're chanting the holy name. We're trying to uplift ourselves. So everyone makes mistakes. We keep chanting. We move forward because there are no other rules. If you chant, everything will be fine. So if they make a mistake, you know, chant more. Are the ones that are saying we don't care for the rules saying that? Then that means they do care for the rules. The problem is it's their rules, not Krishna's rules. Human being must follow rules. He must have religion. So you follow God's or you'll make one up. It's just the way it is. You'll make it up. Right? Does that make sense? So it's just the way it works. It's just the way it works. Okay, just example. One would say, how one makes it up. Has anybody here been to a Vaishnav temple in India? Nothing to do with us. Okay. When the lamp after the aarti goes around, what does it do? Does it go up to each person? Or it just goes down a particular path and everybody comes over to the lamp? Right? Okay. Every temple in India does that. The lamp follows a certain path, everyone makes some endeavor to go over and get it. Okay. Now, if you go to our temples, and that's what we were doing here in Mayapur. There was an aisle between Prabhupada and the deities. You go up one side, all the men come over, you go down the other side of the women. Of course, the temple is a little smaller, it's a little easier, now it's a little bit bigger. But there's that principle, right? Every temple of ours in the world, how does the lamp go around? It goes up to each individual. And how does it go? It goes according to the latest printout that the new bhaktas have made, down to the minute who joined first, who's taller, you know, who's fatter, who's nastier, like this. And they all have their thing and it goes around and each, how did that happen? How is it so consistent? Why is it every temple you can go to that when the flower comes around, while you're chanting, they won't do it while you're not chanting. It has to be while you're singing, then they stick the flower in your nose. Right? And before that they touched it to your forehead. Where does this come from? You see it in any other temple in the world? No. Why? Because the devotees made it up. That is their religion. So they're saying, we don't care. So what happens? They make their own religion. Does that make sense? It's just the way it works. You know? Oh, you don't have any second initiated devotees to cook, right? So then what happens? You get one second initiated devotee, come into the kitchen, turn on the fires, right? Very important point, remember that. Then after that, then anybody can cook. Because it's starting the fire that's the most, that's what makes the difference between it's cooked with bhakti and purity and standards or not, is who turned on the fire. Does that make sense? How many temples do this? Where did that come from? Tradition? No, devotees made it up. The important thing is the second initiated devotee is purified. He's authorized, he's recognized to cook for the deity. and the consciousness of such a devotee is naturally going to be greater than the new bhakta. What does it got to do with who turned the fire on? Anybody can make the fire. The new bhaktas can turn the fire on. It's who cooks on it that's important. So how did this come around? How did this come about? Therefore, they make their own religion up. Does that make sense? That's the whole point. So, nice if it's in line with tradition, it actually gets the job done, but something like this does not get the job done. At least the lamp going around, everyone gets the lamp. Of course, it's a little of annoyance that you do go to go for the lamp, and hey, get out of the way, like this. So that's not Vaishnava. Right? Does that make sense? So that's why generally you don't see the same person taking the lamp around for too long. Right? The offenses pile up and then, you know, they're not the one. Does that make sense? So, whole idea, if it gets the job done, great. But if it doesn't, what's the use? So, that's the idea, is that it's because it's in connection to Krishna and it follows tradition, then it works very, very nicely. Because tradition is those persons who always think of Krishna, then the tradition is the lifestyle they live. That's the meaning of tradition. Tradition is, what did the great personalities do? Right? So that's the difference. Brahmins and Kshatriyas, they follow, what did the great people did? Even if they were millions of years ago, what did, you know, Dasarath, what did Ram do? What did Yayati do? What did Yudhishthir do? That's important to the Brahmins and Kshatriyas. Vaishyas and Shudras, what's important to them? Oh, everybody's doing it. Who is that everybody? Or everybody's saying it. Who is that? Your friend that you bumped into, one guy. Does that make sense? So this is very, very important to understand that it's the Vedic culture on its own has no meaning, because here it's a reflection anyway. But if you connect it to Krishna, then it becomes real. Right? So naturally, due to Yukta Vairagya, anything can be connected. But that doesn't mean that if we have the opportunity that we can connect it in a way that's authorized by authority, that we wouldn't do it. Right? Does that make sense? That's the basic principle. Otherwise, this Jarasandha was always a demon. It wasn't that he became a demon now. Like that. But the demons follow it nicely because they know it works. But our point is just material success isn't enough. It's not enough. You have to connect it to Krishna. That's the important thing. Okay? Then we see that he has his hunksa and dimvaka. So, and it mentions they were well conversant with the science of politics and morality. And they are foremost of all intelligent men, means they could really, within that, they were conversant and they could really make up policy. So these are more dangerous. Right? What makes a difference between the big demons and the small demons? Right? The small demons are the one where you come along in the forest and there he is with his hands outstretched and he's got his mouth in the middle of his stomach and he's yelling and screaming and running at you to eat you. Those are the small ones. Right? The big ones are the ones that know the Vedic culture and think and then use it not for Krishna. Does that make sense? So that makes the difference. Okay. And then because they were so powerful, then we see that qualified kings like these Andakas, Kukuras, and the Rishnis. Kukura. Isn't there a snack? Okay. Then they understood it, no need to fight, because if they do, they'll be defeated. Right? So that's the point, is the king isn't foolish in his fighting. He's smart. So if he has a chance to win, then he'll fight. If he doesn't, then they'll use policy. Does that make sense? So it doesn't mean that you give up. It's not a compromise. It just means that this time I can't do what is, you know, is the ideal. Is that okay? Section 20, Jarasandha, Badha, Parva. Okay, now we go into the next Parva. Krishna said, you have a question, yes. What's the science of saying things indirectly? Indirectly still getting the job done. The difficulty generally in speaking the truth is either a person's ego or a person's attachment. Right? The intelligence is technically neutral. The senses just sit there. They're ready and willing to do whatever, but you have to tell them what to do. The intelligence is able to tell what's there. It observes what's there and gives you options based on what you say is the parameters. You know what I'm saying? Does that make sense? Like you say, how many columns here? So the mind has already set the parameters. We want a number of columns. Then the intelligence can go through and figure it out. You understand? Or we say, what's holding up this building? Okay, then the intelligence will go and look around and, you know, okay, it's not the creepers, it's not that bamboo there. It must be. Does that make sense? So therefore, but that sentiment is actually based on the ego. You have an identity, so therefore your mind, based on that, says, this is good for my ego, so you accept that. This is bad for my ego, my identity, therefore. Because your identity is your security. Because then you have meaning. Right? It means you have connection. Right? Then relationship is there. Right? Then the need means then, you know, you have a need, you are needed, so then you're valuable. But your existence is going to be that relationship, the connection. Okay? So then the thing comes up is so therefore, if the person you're able to deal in such a way that you can deal straight and they're comfortable with that, that's always the easiest, the nicest, most comfortable. Those are the people you can be the closest with, always be with. Right? The more they're trippy, the more their ego gets in the way, the more you have to formalize the relationship and keep it reduced to the point of, you know, your ability to... It's comfortable, it's digestible, right? So, therefore, when you're dealing with that, which may come up in anyone at any time, is then you're dealing with the easiest thing is deal with third party. Right? You want to say something, point out how a third party was in this situation. You don't have to say they're in the same situation as you. You just say the situation. Because in third party, it's nothing to do with the person there. And by default, if two people are talking about a third party, they have a relationship. You know what I'm saying? So then you have a relationship, so that's nice, and you're talking about a third party. Just be careful in how you say it, that it's in words and that. Don't hit any, you know, buzzwords, you know, hit any buttons that the other person's going to freak out about. You know what I'm saying? So then you have to be very careful, word by word, you know, tone by tone, that you go through and explain it. But that's generally the easiest way, right? Or if it's more obvious, it's something more direct, it's closer, then you start off by pointing out, you know, showing that you know them, so what you're going to say is valuable to them. In other words, relationship has to be there. So you point out how generally, you know, the good qualities that are there, or their motive. Does that make sense? You know, it's like, generally you always, you know, do this very, very nicely. What happened today, you know? And if they don't say something, then throw things out for them. You know, does somebody bother you? You're feeling sick, you're this or that. You're going like that, so because it's none of those, they'll just have to say, no, I spaced out, or, you know, I was being stupid, or I was lazy, or... You know what I'm saying? But it's like, they're okay, and we're here, and what's happening, and, you know, something, you know, wrong, like that. So that's one, you know. Another is that something's been done wrong. You know, so then it's like, you know, normally it's like this, and so, I mean, I can understand it's, you know, great that you wanted to do this, and you were trying to help and all that, but, you know, I mean, you know, shoving the kid upside down into the bucket, you know, like that was not actually beneficial like that, you know. like that. I know you didn't want them to, you know, how you say, trip over the bucket. So if you thought if they were in the bucket, then they wouldn't trip over the bucket. But, you know, it's not getting done what you, you know what I'm saying? That's another way of doing it. Does that make sense? Now, in this is that sometimes the maximum you can get, and in doing this, you have to also be very patient and tolerant. Maybe the maximum you can get out of this is just they recognize it was wrong, but they're not really accepting, really committing themselves are going to correct it. But if you're nice and after a while, then they might start to. You know what I'm saying? So those kind of persons, then, those are ones, if you have to deal with them, then you deal. Otherwise, such persons would not be very good to be very close with. Right, those that can understand they do something wrong, then there's a tolerance that they'll do it wrong because you said it nice. They'll take it, okay, this is bad, but it won't necessarily create the determination to do it right. Right? Because either naturally they will, or it didn't have the shock value, so they won't. But you keep talking, you keep saying, you keep pointing it out in nice ways, you know, like this. Until maybe one day then it gets through. Otherwise, if there's ever an opportunity where you can say it more directly because you've said it nice all these times, then you can one time say it very direct, then it may get maybe the catalyst to make it kind of take it more seriously. Right? You know what I'm saying? But you always speak nice first because people do things out of ignorance wrong. So you're trying to, teacher means you remove the ignorance. Like that. But then sometimes then it has to be, it means one doesn't take the removal of ignorance seriously, so one has to use something stronger. But the stronger methods you use less often. Someone who you can regularly use the strong methods and it works well, those are excellent students. Because then you're not dealing with ego. The relationships are very strong, this and that. But you have to judge, because sometimes it'll be like that, sometimes it won't. Someone who consistently like that, then will be able to do a lot, you know, like that. So those are always your best students. The next would be ones that generally they're like that, but occasionally they have problems. Then there's the next best will be ones that have problems, but occasionally you can get through. And then the ones that always have problems, but you can kind of guide them and all that, that's your, you know, less. And the ones that you just have to deal nicely, but you don't, it doesn't really get anywhere, those are ones that you should keep outside your circle of, you know, how you say, outside your world. You deal with it, because your world will touch all other worlds, but those, don't bring them in, don't get close, don't give them positions, don't do anything with them. Like they may be great in someone else. They may work with someone else's mentality, but they won't be. They don't work with you. So you shouldn't take them on as a student. You know, you shouldn't try to do that kind of work with them. Does that make sense? Because teacher student should match. Like that. Is that okay? Yes. How do you
control
without? Aha. The secret to that is in the wedding ceremony. In the panigrahana, when the husband is giving, or the groom, let's say, no, the husband and wife at this time. But the husband is giving blessings to the wife. So one of the blessings is, may you be the controller of, he's talking about his own family, my mother, my father, my relatives, my everybody. Right? So does that mean that she's going to walk in her, you know, how you say, scanty, you know, leather outfit, you know, with a whip, you know, and that's, you know, here it is, you know, Bridezilla is here, you know? Is that what it means? No. So what it means is that by affection, by good behavior, by relationship, that's how you control. You know what I'm saying? So that's the smart thing. Means smart women, they do this all the time. They run everything. When it says, means it's a euphemism when it says behind every great man is a woman. What does that mean? Every great man is controlled by one. You understand? But if we say it like that, then the great men kind of lose some enthusiasm, right? You know, it's a male thing. They got to feel, I'm the man. So all the women go, yes, you're the man, you know. So only you can fix the sink that's, you know, like that, you know. Only you can do. I can't do. You know, we need you. You know, then he, yes, you know, I'm the man. He gets out the plunger and, you know, then I go. You know. Right? Does this make sense? Right? So that's the... That's the idea, is that it's through affection, through everything like that, then you really control. Others, then you're using politics and all that. Means you're using anytime you're using diplomacy and politics and morality, it's always going on. But the point is what's the motive of it? Right? Ethics that's used only for pranamoy, you know, for your own purpose of justice and morality and that. That's considered not very good. Then you have someone like Kanika, right? Kanika, Shakuni, like that. So it's seen in that. Then you call them politicians. But someone who's acting on religious principles, but they're just finding a way to get it through to the person so they'll accept it, and that. Then it's called religious, right? You know, if you're trying to train persons in the spiritual subject matter, right, then it's called transcendental, right? And if you're doing it for devotion, actually to invoke that, and that's your actual motive, not, you know, there's some underlying thing with it, it's not mixed, it's called bhakti, right? Does that make sense? Or if I'm using it for simply my own purpose, it's not justice, morality, it's my own sense gratification, then it's anima, it's selfishness. Right? Does that make sense? The other one is for the benefit of the other, but I'm the one benefiting, you know, so the holier than thou kind of thing. Does that make sense? Like that. So, therefore, the underlying principle is that if it's done out of benefit for the other person, because that's what should be done, not because you're special and therefore you can benefit them. You know, in other words, you should not be giving value to your life because you're doing such great things for others. That's Sui Damsarva Bhutanam, right? So Krishna is the friend of everybody. He's the controller, he's the enjoyer, he's the friend. We simply are trying to assist. Okay? So if you have a relationship, then you can get so much done. Then you can speak nicely because the relationship, it gets through, it has more meaning when you talk. It's no relationship, you can talk all day, they don't care. Therefore, you know, only if you yell and scream or stuff, then maybe they'll notice, maybe they won't. You know what I'm saying? Does that make sense? Oh, there's one other way of doing this, on her point. That also matches a common point. Cleverness. You know what I'm saying? In other words, you're dealing with some ego, but at the same time as the person themselves is intelligent or clever. But even if ego's not there, but it's something that it may not just flow so smoothly, there's a little bit of blockage, then you use cleverness. You use some very clever example or even absurd example. You know? You say a few things, a series of things, and something is completely out of whack. You know, like that. You know, so like that. So then, does that make sense? So then it's clever, that makes them laugh. But then, because it's clever, it makes the intelligence work also. You just say something funny, then it just deals with the emotion. Then it makes it light. So you find most people do that. They say something and make a joke out of it so it's light. But you make a joke so it's clever. But depending on what it is, then if it can be, that can be a little close, so it'll be called sarcastic. But if it's not, you still want to avoid the ego, then it's just clever and it's still third party. You know, or it's dealing with them, but it's so absurd that they don't take it personally. Does that make sense? You know? Is that okay? Does that answer your question? Krishna said, oh, this is Krishna talking all about this. So you even had Vaishampayana describing how Krishna was describing, you know, which is being described by Suta Goswami, who's describing what what Vaishampayana said, yeah. Who's describing what Vyasadeva said. Both Hamsa and Dinvaka had fallen. Kamsa also with all his followers had been slain. The time hath therefore come for the destruction of Jarasandha. He is incapable of being vanquished in battle, even by all the celestials and the asuras fighting together. Right. So first he's saying he's so strong because he has Dinvaka and Hamsa, he has support of Kamsa and all that. But now they've been slain, so now we can defeat him. Right? And then right after saying that, then he says, he's incapable of being defeated in battle. Right? So it's like, yes, we can get him, but he can't be defeated in battle. Oh, then, you know, so it's a gradual thing of, you know, yes, but this and that, but now that's over. Now we can get him. Yes, you know, and that, but this and that. Oh, then we have to consider that. Yes, but we can do it like this. Yeah, you know, so slowly you completely forget all your, your own issues and own, what you say? Yeah, all apprehensions and all that. Because you've been so caught up in the emotional, you know, turn like this, you know, then. Right? So this is also, you can see, is the method for dealing. Someone has a problem with something, then you actually relate to their problem. Say it is a problem, and then show how it's not there. You know what I'm saying? And then if need be, then show how, means then show it's not there, then show that there's, okay, but now we have to get it done, right? So first thing is there's the apprehension whether he can be killed or not. So he's too powerful, so we can't do it. But now all the things that make it so he can't be are removed. But now is how it's going to be done. So now we understand it can't be done in battle. He can't be defeated in battle. So now there has to be another way to do it. Does this make sense? Because you're relating to the person, but then you're taking it back. So you're moving it forward. It's seemingly going back and forth, but it's actually moving forward. Right? So that's the whole point. Do we get the understanding? Because you're dealing with the mind. So the mind is emotions. And what do emotions do? They're up and down. Like that. Sound familiar? Okay, so that means in the relationship, it's moving forward, but it seems that it's going up and down. But you can. How do you tell that something's going up and something's going down? It means what has to be there to be able to tell that? If it's in one place and it's going up and down, what is it? It's a line, right? Because there's movement, then you can tell it's going up and down. That means it's progressing. Only if it's progressing, then it can move. Does that make sense? But movement is there. If there's movement, you can do something with it. It's like one devotee was telling me is that he was seeing when they're loading like at the docks into the ships and stuff or into these big things. They have these huge, I'm not sure what they are. They're bales of something, like bales of wool or something. They're huge. They're like 6 feet by 6 feet. They weigh, I don't know, hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of kilos. You can't pick them up. But they have this method that they have a hook and they get it onto the side, onto the corner. And once it's on the little point there, one guy can push it around and by spinning it, they can take it anywhere they like. And then they stack them up in levels and he spins it and the next guy can pick it up and spin it. They keep spinning it up many, many levels simply because they have it on the edge. So that's the point, is it's moving, but if you control it, then you can move it wherever you like. You know? Does that make sense? Like the Aikido. It's coming at you, it's very dangerous, it looks bad, but by how you control it, then you become the center of it, and then you move it wherever you like. It's the same principle. So as long as it's moving, you can do something with it. That's why no means maybe. Right? So that's why you want nothing to happen. We don't say no. We do nothing about it, because no movement means nothing can happen. Right? Does that make sense over there? Right? Yeah? As long as there's some possibility of interaction, it's movement. You can do something with it. When there's no movement, there's nothing can be done. Right? So protection doesn't mean, it's part of it. Protection doesn't mean dealing with the situation so nothing happens. Protection means creating an environment where nothing is there to happen. Does that make sense? Right? Then when occasionally something does come up, you deal with it. We create an environment where there's nothing there. So how will it happen? Does that make sense? He is incapable of being vanquished in battle, even by all the celestials and the asuras fighting together. We think, however, that he should be vanquished in a personal struggle with bare arms. Okay, so now he's bringing the point. So before he was going back and forth that he can't be defeated, he's too powerful. Now he's brought it that he can be defeated, but not in war. But single combat, then yes. In me is policy. In Bhima is strength. And in Arjuna is triumph. And therefore, as prelude to performing the Rajasuya, we will certainly achieve the destruction of the ruler of Magadha. When we three approach that monarch in secret, he will, without doubt, be engaged in an encounter with one of us. From fear of disgrace, from covetousness, and from pride of strength, he will certainly summon Bhima to the encounter. Right, because in other things, because here's disgrace, is that if you fight with an unworthy opponent, then people will say, you know, who is this guy? Right? Because you can't take advantage. It's actually disgraceful nowadays because people have no standards. They don't mind taking advantage. But actually, it's disgraceful. Because if he fights with Krishna, he's not his match. Arjuna is an archer, not a wrestler. But Bhima, now he's a match. Then you can say, yes, that was an equal match. You know? So like that. Covetousness. Yeah, so yeah, he'll want to win. Pride of strength, because he thinks I'm very, you know, strong and all that. And he'll want to win. So then he'll pick Bhima. Like death himself that slays a person, however swollen with pride, the long-armed and mighty Bhimasena will effect the destruction of the king. Ooh, long arm. He also had arms down to his knees. If thou knowest my heart, if thou hast any faith in me, then make over to me as a pledge Bhima and Arjuna without loss of time. Right? So he's already playing on the point that he says, I know you, you'll do everything properly, you have no motives, you won't deal out of sentiment. So now he's saying, if you have any faith in me, then do this and give me Arjuna and Bhima. So now he's brought it a full circle back to, you know, the basis of Yudhishthira's discussion. Does that make sense? Right? Vaishampayana continued. Thus addressed by the Exalted One, Yudhishthira, I guess the Exalted she or should be capital, beholding both Bhima and Arjuna standing with cheerful faces, replied, saying, right, you know, a fight, you know, so they're all smiling, you know. Saying, O Achyuta, thou slayer of all enemies, say not so. Thou art the Lord of the Pandavas. We are dependent on thee. What thou sayest, O Govinda, is consistent with wise counsels. Thou never leadest those upon whom prosperity hath turned their back. I, who stay under thy command, regardeth that Jarasandha is already slain. Okay, so he's saying just if you have faith in me and this and that, then you give. Say, don't say like that. Whatever you feel is the right thing, you whatever you do, that's perfect. So therefore now we see he's turned it around where now it's Yudhishthira is encouraging. Does that make sense? That's always the best thing. If someone else feels it's, you know, it's their inspiration, that's what you're trying to do. Right? This thing is, the control shouldn't be, this is not a thing under control. Control doesn't necessarily have to be obvious. The idea is if your ego is less, you're just getting it done. Then you know you're in control. It means you know you're in control, but the other person may not. So you inspire in such a way that they're inspired to do it. Because when someone's inspired, they'll always act. So if you can get them inspired, then they'll do. But who got them inspired? That's you. Does that make sense? So afterwards you don't say, you know what I'm saying? I who stand to thy command regardeth that Jarasandha is already slain, that the monarchs confined by him have already been set free, and that the Rajasuya hath already been accomplished by me. Right? So this isn't the ego, this is actually just faith in Krishna, that by his blessing he wants it, then it's done. O Lord of the universe, O thou best of persons, watchfully ask act thou so that this task may be accomplished. Without ye, then I dare not live. Like a sorrowful man, afflicted with disease and bereft of the three attributes of morality, pleasure and wealth. Partha cannot live without Sauri, Krishna, nor can Sauri live without Partha. Nor is there anything in the world that is unconquerable by these two. Right, so we see Krishna has policy, right? Because everything works by his plan. But there's triumph, there's victory through who? Arjuna. So Arjuna is who? In this. Nara means he's the devotee, he's the guru. Right, so when you have guru and Krishna, then everything works. So by the blessings of guru working according to Krishna's plan, then everything is successful. Does that make sense? Like that. Otherwise, why do they keep... Well, it means Arjuna's triumph, but what's he going to do there? Nothing. No, but because Krishna and Guru and Krishna are there, then everything's going to work perfectly. Does that make sense? So just that Arjuna wants it to happen and in support of Krishna, then Bhima will be successful. Right? Does that make sense? So for Krishna, actually, the blessings of the devotees are more important. To him, that's the most important. Does that make sense? Also, he noticed this thing is that somebody doesn't want something to happen and Krishna talks them, you know, into it. Then Krishna likes doing that. Like, then you can say, you're in control, right? The modern thing is, just do what I say, then that means I'm in control. Otherwise, you don't do what I say, you're not in control. No. It's the method of getting them to follow. That's where the real control is. Because the other one, that you just say it, they do it. What does that mean? They're just submissive. But they'd be submissive to you, they're submissive to us, other person. They just have good qualities. You understand? So you're not technically in control. Officially you can say, but as an individual, as a person, you're not in control. Does that make sense? But you're able to take someone who is doesn't want to do something and convince them to do it, that means you're in control. That's masculine. Right? Just that you say it, it's done, that's feminine. Right? So that's why it's not a one-way street. It's two-way, but you have to notice that the two ways are going in different directions. One-way street. So one-way street should be equal, but that means you're both going the same direction. That's called two-lane street. But we're talking about two-way street. So that means you're going in opposite directions. Right? So the man has to convince the woman by saying it, it just happens. Does that make sense? So, of the two, Krishna is Satyasankalpa. What he says happens. What he thinks happens. Right? But where do we see this mood of Krishna's manifest? In what realm? Vaikuntha. And in Vrindavan, is it Satyasankalpa? No. Right? He wants to be the gopis. They say, beat it. We don't want to even talk to you. Right? He wants to be with the gopis, and Jatila is there making sure he's not. You understand? Therefore, overcoming the obstacles, that's the more full manifestation. Does that make sense? So of the two, which is higher, which is lower? Right? So therefore, if the man is supposed to be, you know, senior or superior, or so which one should he be taking? Okay, and then that leaves which one for the ladies? Okay? Does this make sense? So we cleared the, you know, 50-50 two-way street on this one? At least in theory. I mean, now digestion, that's another thing. Does that make sense? So that's the thing, is the philosophy is the culture. The culture is the philosophy. Right? They're just different angles of the same thing. O Lord of the universe, O thou best of persons, watchfully act thou so that this task may be accomplished. Oh, we already said this. Okay. Partha cannot live without Sori, nor can Sori live without Partha. Nor is there anyone in the world that is unconquerable by these two, namely Krishna and Arjuna. This handsome Bhima also is the foremost of all persons endued with might, of great renown. What can he not achieve with ye two? Troops, when properly led, always do excellent service. A force without a leader hath been called inert by the wise. Forces, therefore, should always be led by experienced commanders. Into places that are low, the wise always conduct the water. Even fishermen cause the water of tanks to run out through holes. Experienced leaders always lead their forces, noting the loopholes and assailable points of the foes. We shall, therefore, strive to accomplish our purpose, following the leadership of Govinda, conversant with the science of politics, that personage whose fame hath spread all over the world. For the successful accomplishment of one's purposes, one should ever place Krishna in the van, that foremost of personages, whose strength consists in wisdom and policy, and possesseth a knowledge of both method and means. For the accomplishment of one's purpose, let therefore Arjuna, the son of Prita, follow Krishna, the foremost of the Yadavas, and let Bhima follow Arjuna. Policy, good fortune, and might will then bring about success in a matter of requiring valor, right? So this good fortune means that you're following Krishna, right? We'll discuss in detail this more on Thursday. But you see here the whole point of the leadership, following that leadership, means in other words, leadership is following Krishna and others are following leadership, right? And that leadership is finding what's the best method. Without leadership, everything is inert. It doesn't happen. So if something's not going anywhere, why? That means there's no leadership. Right? Is that okay?
Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Jai Srila Prabhupada ki, Samaveta Bhaktivedanta ki. Jai Nita Gaur.
I was reading yesterday, I was probably saying that Krishna gives guru, God gives guru, and then guru gives God. It's just on that point.
That's a really good point.
Did bring it up just in case I forget that on Thursday. Because that section there is a really nice place. So if a relationship's not going anywhere, it's because there's no leadership. So that means that the man needs to do something to create leadership in which now
movement, the man
then you
the
can
mood.
Do something.
Yeah, actually.
And then he finds the weaknesses, so therefore, he means whatever's weaknesses in himself, and whatever's weaknesses in the relationship, and he removes that, and what are opportunities in the relationship, he takes advantage of that.
Through working on himself.
Yeah. Yes, may we help you? Huh? I can't hear what you're saying. Huh? What is this question? How many times are you allowed to celebrate your birthday party? It basically depends upon how many years you live. So if you live 100 years, then you can celebrate it 100 times. If you live 200 years, you can celebrate it 200 times.
So that's it.
Right, you want to have a birthday every day for the whole year? How many birthdays do you want to have?
Lily wants to have
Lily. Oh, yeah, she does. So she's asking for Lily. Well, the normal thing is the birthday. It means it's one day. So you have the celebration on the one day. That's generally what you do. You don't have many birthdays. You just have one birthday, though. You have however many kind of programs you want. But the point is, there's only one birthday per year because there's only one day per year that's your birthday. Right? Okay.